see possible futures all at once. And in so many futures, our enemies prevail. But I do see a way. There is a narrow way through.
Well, welcome back, everybody, to Take Me to Your Reader, discussing adapted science fiction at its best and worst. I'm Seth.
I'm James.
And I'm Colin.
And I'm a friend of Jameis.
I'm also a friend of Jameis.
And he is Jameis.
I'm Jameis.
Or I guess they said Jameis in these movies. Because we are back for the third time to talk about Dune. We originally did the 1984 movie and the sci-fi miniseries from the 2000s. I think 2000, actually.
Yeah.
And then we did an episode about the first half of Denis Villeneuve's adaptation, two-part adaptation, and now we're back to talk about the second part. And I know at least two of us rewatched the first part this week. I don't think you got to.
I did. I finished it 3 minutes this morning, before James came through the door.
Oh, sweet.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. Nice. So, yeah.
Awesome.
So now that, I mean, you know, when we originally recorded about it, it was really close to after watching it. And this was when you kind of started noticing, you know, sometimes my reactions right after a movie need some time to temper and come back a week later and it might be different. Cause you had some, some words for the movie, the first half of the adaptation last time. And then you came around a little bit on it over time. So at the risk of some of that happening, cause we literally just came back from watching the movie.
Well, yes. we did go to dinner first. That's enough processing time, Colin.
Yeah. A little bit. Yeah. Yeah. So for those of you that weren't tracking, he's talking to me, not James. James is always reasonable and well thought and spoken, and I'm not always.
And well spiced.
Generally well spiced.
Or spiked anyway.
Perhaps word is lubed.
What's the difference? I'm just
kidding. Probably. Oh, by the way, shout outs to Sean, our server at the Thirsty Lion Pub, gastropub in Hillsboro. We gave him a card.
Yeah, it was cool.
I'm glad you had one.
Yeah, yeah. I thought Thirsty Lion is an appropriately named place for after
watching a movie. After spending some time in Arrakis.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. So anyhow, now that we've digested both parts of Dune, you know, Colin, assessment?
Oh my gosh. So first of all, Denis makes incredible movies. Yes. Beautifully thought. Well scripted. You know, I didn't find like there was a lot of plot holes. I wasn't feeling like things were left dangling or hanging. We can talk for quite a while about the differences between the original source material and this movie.
Yeah.
But I don't, given that he has already stated he's going to make a third one and that it's going to be an adaptation of Dune Messiah, which is an odd choice because there's a follow-up to Dune Messiah called Children of Dune, which is actually the end of the trilogy. It might make some sense to try and leave some danglies in this movie that wouldn't normally be in a 100% canonical adaptation.
Right.
Yeah.
Which they kind of did, right, with the pregnancy and all that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, there's some differences, especially regarding offspring.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Everybody kind of stays inside, where they didn't, that didn't happen in the book.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So we'll talk about some of the differences as we go. And, you know, when we go see a movie in the theater, obviously we can't take copious notes or anything. And so we're just kind of off the cuff, you know, in impressions and that kind of stuff. So what do you think, James? Having rewatched the, you know, part one and part two, what do you think? It is very loud. And if you watch it in Regal RPX, you know.
Yeah, the Regal RPX, so the butt kicker seats were fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, thumping. Until you get the butt kickers that are like not working great, because I had way more right cheek than left cheek.
You do want balanced cheeks.
Yeah.
Yeah. In the beginning when they were dropping all the things, they were like, ka-chunk, ka-chunk.
Oh, the thumpers.
Are you feeling that in the seat? I'm like, whoa.
Oh, when the people were falling.
Yeah, when the people were falling. Yeah. That was rad. So it was fun to have the bucket seats and in the theater and just the sound and the, like Colin was saying, the movie was, visuals were great. It was epic proportion movie.
Yeah.
So it was pretty sweet.
One thing that I really like this as an adaptation of Dune as well. And, you know, as I said, we'll talk about some of the differences, but one thing that I really like about Villeneuve's movies is, you know, this is an epic movie. It's got big action set pieces and that kind of stuff in it as well, but none of it feels empty the way a lot of action movies do these days. There's a lot of stuff where, you know, we got the trailer for Godzilla X Kong, right? I'm definitely going to see it. It looks like a blast. It looks like absolute nonsense, but it'll be fun.
It's super fun.
Right. That is not what this movie is, right? It's really like an old style epic movie with modern production values, and that's very cool.
Right.
Yeah. Well, part of the tension is this idea that, you know, the emperor of the universe. Had Paul's father assassinated, but nobody knows that except for the Harkonnens and for him. Mm-hmm. So there's this thread, fairly wide thread of political intrigue, which runs through the entire first book and both movies.
Yeah, yeah. And that's not the easiest thing to capture on screen in a movie.
To make interesting.
Yeah.
Sure. I mean, take the George Lucas prequels to the Star Wars.
Mm-hmm. Oh, boy.
Yeah. Okay, maybe don't take them.
Yeah. Right.
We'll mention them in passing.
Okay, they passed. So one thing I wanted to talk about is the compression of the time scale on this. Because the book takes Paul from being 15 years old to being probably in his 20s.
Okay.
Because he ends up having at least one kid. I think it was just one. But, you know, he's essentially married to Chani, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of stuff happens. Where here, it really feels like it is about a year, maybe. Because it's a pregnancy, right?
Right, right. It's not even a pregnancy yet.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not even a pregnancy.
Yeah.
Which is an interesting decision because in the book, the baby is born.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, yeah, that's what I was saying.
And is she's a toddler and she goes around and she ends up, doesn't she end up killing the Baron?
Yeah, yeah. So that, I'm not sure how I feel about that, you know, because that's sort of a meaty female role. For a little kid, right? But here we have Anya Taylor-Joy playing that character in sort of a...
In the very far future.
Speaking into the past almost.
Right, right.
That's stuff that comes into the other movies, other books, right? Where there's where his son is pre-born. I remember that from the Children of Dune series that was on.
Yeah. That's why I was talking to you about how do we think this movie is going to end? Yeah. Because there's still kind of a lot to go for Dune itself.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know if it's enough to make a whole trilogy, but definitely like more than a duology.
Yeah. Yeah. No, there's the book even, you know, the book kind of ends on there. Okay. Well, what's going to happen next?
Yeah.
I felt like it was a satisfying conclusion because it's Paul coming to terms with the Holy War, right?
Mm-hmm.
And his role in that. And is there a way out of it?
Yeah. But they're just getting on the cusp of that with the end of this movie. So
Right. He comes to the point where he's like,
so they're not quite,
go bring
they're definitely not quite done. And I don't think they're done with the book, but I think the way they pace the movie, it's a good span of Dune into, I guess, Dune Messiah, right? That's the next one.
No, I mean, the book actually wraps up everything.
Yeah.
So, and then I mean,
for the movies, though.
For the movies.
To kind of spread it out that way, I think the way they did it is okay, I suppose, put it that way.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Aaliyah's not born yet, and yet she's definitely a character because Jessica talks to her all the time, which is kind of creepy, kind of not.
Which I thought was funny. I was like, oh, wait a minute.
She's Kuwato.
Interesting.
Right. Yeah, totally.
Start the reactor, free Arrakis.
Nuke Arrakis.
In the book, Paul takes Princess Irulan as his wife, but Chani as his concubine and announces it and goes, you know, I will have no children with you. All my children will come through Chani. Yeah. Here in this movie, Chani is really bent out of shape the entire second movie because she wants Paul and not Muad'Dib,
yeah.
You know, the savior, you know, and she's mad that they've had this religion forced on them, which is all, you know, the whole Bene Gesserit thing. And yet it's all coming true and the Fremen are going to be freed and they're taking control of Arrakis. And
That's an interesting contradiction in the book, really, is that it says explicitly that the Bene Gesserit have been laying the groundwork so that when they came to this planet, they would be welcomed.
Right.
And so, and it's just sort of convenient that Jessica jumped the line a little bit because she was supposed to have a girl that would be married to Fade Rautha, and that was the plan.
Right.
And so now she has a boy, and he turns out to be the Kwisatz Haderach.
Yeah.
And it just it works out, but I liked that Chani was sort of the voice of like the indigenous peoples and saying, why are you listening to this propaganda? It's not a prophecy, it's a story. And I thought that was a powerful line, actually. And there's definitely a lot to talk about here in terms of religious fundamentalism and the way that people who have fundamentalist kind of leanings will look at someone that they think was sent by God, and anything they do, they will turn it into, that's proof. That's even more proof.
Oh, yeah.
The fact that he doesn't want to be called the Savior means he is the Savior.
He's so humble, just like they said he would be.
Yeah. And you know, two out of three of us are Christian, and James was at least raised, right? So, you know, some of that I feel a little attacked, but I feel like we have it coming.
Well, in point, you know, the other big issue today isn't necessarily Christianity. It's Trump.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
I was obliquely referring to, if you haven't seen it and you feel like you might need to purge a little bit, go watch God Made Trump. It's a video. It is disgusting.
Oh my gosh.
It's essentially making Trump into a messiah.
Is this like a YouTube short or something?
It's you can find it on YouTube, but my goodness, it's horrifying. Oh my God. I'm embarrassed.
Yeesh.
To be an American,
right?
And someone who, you know, grew up conservative Christian, mm-hmm. you know, how are you falling for this?
Yeah. Right. But
because people want to believe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So anyway, we're not going to talk about politics.
Back to Dune. You know,
yeah. There's enough politics in Dune.
Yeah. I like the one little mansplaining moment when Johnny is trying to teach him mm-hmm. to do the sand walk. And he's like, well, actually, you know, my book tape said this. And he looks at her like, okay, I'm an idiot. Yeah.
But then they go dancing, and that's what they're doing. They're doing that step, and they're going down the sand together.
It was really filmed nicely as
yeah, it was a dance, it was cool,
right?
Yeah.
And I like that the patterns in the sand almost mm-hmm. look like Arabic script, which I thought was kind of I'm not sure if it was on purpose.
Yeah,
but that is kind of what it looked like to me.
It was it was interesting because yeah. it matched kind of the script that they had all throughout the rest of the movie.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was kind of
like
cool.
the face uh-huh. art and that kind of stuff. Yeah. Illustrations.
it reminded me a lot of the changes to the second part of Dune. Reminded me a lot about the changes that we just watched in Percy Jackson, where having written all five books, you can throw in nods to what's going to come.
Yeah.
And I think that's a lot of what's happening here, right? They know mm-hmm. they're going to make a third movie. And so they're going to suspend, right? To make this three movies instead of finishing the story with movie two, they're actually, you know, continuing it on. So, you know, things with Paul and Chani are not well, you know, Aaliyah has not been born yet. Yep. And, you know, all the consequences of that.
That's kind of what I thought was good about them not rushing to get what's the girl's name again?
Aaliyah.
Get Aaliyah out of her mom. Yeah, I suppose. Yeah. Right? Not to, because that would have really, I feel like, rushed the movie.
Yeah.
If they tried to pull that off in the same thing.
I kept expecting a time jump. Yeah. Right? Because mm-hmm. Paul is comatose. I kept expecting that's gonna be months. I thought it was at least weeks in the book.
Oh,
but maybe it was only days. But yeah, I kept expecting that he was going to go to the south and find his mother there with this precocious toddler.
Right. He did become a Fremen awfully quick, I suppose. Yeah, that's a good point, too.
He did. Yeah.
I would have expected years, I guess.
Yeah, maybe.
But then it wouldn't have played into keeping.
Oh, that was the other part was that they did mention it, right? That there's this thing about if Paul is going to ascend in his role here into leadership, mm-hmm. he's got to fight.
Stilgar.
And I kept thinking, oh, they're skipping that. That sucks. But they didn't. They really worked it out in kind of a nice way.
They didn't end it the same way the book did, right? He goes, you know, I don't need to kill any one leader to take their place. I am the leader of leaders.
Right. Mm-hmm. No, he did that in this, right? He says, I'm the Duke.
No, he said, why would I kill the sharpest weapon in my tool kit?
Oh, that's straight out of the book.
That is. But all the rest about, you know, he is the leader of leaders stepping into that role.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
well, yeah, he did it differently, like by almost doing like a mentalist show.
Right? Yep, basically. Oh.
I'm going to prove my bona fides of being Zan al Ghaib, I felt like that worked really well, and then you know, still falling back on the same thing from the book of saying, look, this is it's my island,
it's my island.
So I thought that was pretty cool.
Kudos to Hans Zimmer for another great score.
Yeah.
Although, again, you know, we heard that in Batman movies. Invent something new, will you?
One thing that I really liked here is that, you know, I'll forgive the 2000s for being technologically what they were. Mm, 1984 mm-hmm. also.
Yeah.
None of the worm action in those movies was as dynamic at all. You know, in the 1984 one, they were standing on top of them going, pew, 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 pew. Right? Yeah. And then in the 2001, there's just not a lot of movement to it. Mm-hmm. Where here, it's much more like when he has his first ride.
Oh, yeah.
It was very like man, this is not going well here, Paul.
You
feel the speed, right?
The advance in movie technology definitely like made this more adaptable mm-hmm. in a more satisfying way.
It made the worms seem more dangerous.
Yeah.
Like you're riding the worm because you don't really, even in the book, you don't. Even in the book, you don't totally feel the danger of grabbing onto a worm. And
as it's moving through a dune.
Yep.
And the dune's collapsing underneath you.
Yeah. Yeah. What'd you think of Christopher Walken as the emperor?
Yeah.
I thought it was fine.
Yeah.
I thought it was
serviceable, I guess.
Yeah. Old guy.
I was surprised we went as far as we did in the movie without Fade Rautha. Rautha, I guess they said.
Fade Rautha. Yeah. Oh, really? You think so? Yeah, okay.
I mean, maybe. Right about the time I was like, we haven't seen Fade yet. That's a little weird. Like, literally, like the next
scene. Yeah, maybe you're saying.
Well, they dropped the whole pervy, oh, lovely, lovely Fade.
Well, and they did some changes to the Baron, too, right? He's still fat and loathsome,
right.
But not explicitly a pederast.
You're right.
The people who seemed to die in his room didn't appear to be assassins like they were in the book. They all also did not appear male or young.
True.
And they were pretty indiscriminate about who they killed, Harkonnens.
Especially Fade, right? You look at him wrong and he slashes your throat.
Yeah,
exactly. And says, hey, haul that to my quarters. Sorry. Right. It was almost like the Brides of Dracula.
Yeah.
His entourage. Right. Yeah.
I thought he wanted their water. That was all.
I thought it was a strong performance from Austin Butler. Very, very different from Elvis, for instance. he has finally shed the Elvis voice by doing a Stellan Skarsgård kind of voice with the gravel to it, you know?
Yeah.
And a little hint of an accent. I thought that was effective. The teeth were a little weird.
I don't know. I didn't feel like his voice quite matched him. Every time he was talking, I kind of thought it was a big dude. The Baron.
Oh, yeah. Because they sounded so similar.
Yeah.
Had so the gravelly voice. They were talking like this all the time.
Yeah. I think he studied.
Yeah.
He probably watched the speech from Andor over and over. What do I sacrifice? Everything. Such a great monologue.
Yeah, that was more clear toned than gravelly, though. The Baron is definitely gravelly voiced all the time.
Right.
Yeah.
And Dave Bautista is not all gravelly voiced.
No. Yeah. But I mean, so I kind of, there were some differences in the way, were they brothers, Fade Rautha and Raban, or were they cousins? I thought they were cousins.
Cousins. Yeah.
They
were cousins because he was calling him uncle, right?
Yeah, but they both, brothers would call.
And wasn't he his son?
No.
Oh.
No.
Whoops.
Fade is definitely a nephew. I know that Raban is a nephew as well, but I didn't know if they were brothers or not canonically. It doesn't matter.
Well, they remember.
Connell will look it up. Yeah. But
I'll look it up.
But, you know, the Baron's plan for Arrakis was send Raban down there, have him terrorize people, squeeze the spice out of it. And so then when I replace him with Fade is much more lovely and he will be received as a savior. Fade here is not lovely in any way.
Right. Yes.
Even his public facing thing, like you can be a fearsome warrior and still have an aspect to you that people find attractive. I don't see anybody finding him attractive unless they're from Getty Prime, where the art style is very brutalist and black and white.
Very black and white. Yes.
I thought that was pretty effective. Like
that was kind of neat. Yeah. It was cool. Yeah. I had an afterthought with your question about Christopher Walken. He wasn't very Christopher Walken in this movie.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't really
a part of the Emperor to be like that.
No.
But so when I saw, you know, when we saw that it was Christopher Walken, I was like, oh, Christopher Walken, sweet. But there was nothing, no outrageous things, no like really cool soliloquies or anything.
I'll be honest, fellas, the fight's going well, but I could use more cowbell. Right.
Exactly. Yeah. There wasn't a whole lot of walking for Christopher Walken being casted. It's true. So I was like, oh, okay.
Sand walking. And the fight choreography I thought was compelling. And so you have the final fight with Fade and Paul. And I like the fact that there was more effort shown, right? It wasn't a walk.
Right.
And
it wasn't a walking.
It also did when they did the arena scene and he didn't use like the poison thing to stop the guy's muscles.
Right.
I thought, okay, well, we're not gonna have that at the end then, right? Why you wouldn't just introduce that in the final fight if you didn't, you know, Chekhov's Kirari needle.
Right.
So yeah, I thought that was pretty cool.
I think I really enjoyed the fight choreography in both movies actually. And all the fight choreography I thought was awesome.
I mean, so this is one thing that I really enjoyed on the rewatch of the first movie was the flashes of Jamis. Right. Where he must be seeing alternate timelines where he and Jamis were good friends.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was going to lead into, and this is the one thing that I kind of did miss, was that I was a friend of Jamis thing. I think that's it's an emotional scene. It's a key scene for Paul. And I was a little bummed we didn't get that.
Well, and him having visions about Jamis guiding him, giving him, you know, like, you know, you need to ride your way through this.
Yeah.
And at one point, you know, asking him for help and having a vision of him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Talked about, Chopping you know, the,
yeah.
Yeah, you know, the whole multiple timeline thing and having prophecies and everything. So Raban and the Beast.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Raban is the Beast.
Yeah. So Fade and Raban were brothers.
They were. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And that makes sense.
The Beast is older and.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And still kicked his butt. Yeah. That's funny.
He's just a little more capable. Raban's the blunt
Blunt weapon.
Yeah.
Well, you can blunt force object.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'd like all those flashes of like Paul knows there were realities where he and Jameis were close and now he had to kill him. And that's tragic. Right.
Well, I think he even tried to make it happen because he offered to, you know, several times, you know, yield.
Yeah. Right.
Do you yield? And then he was told, you know, only one person that leaves this. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I like, I lost his name as Stilgar.
Is that him?
Javier Bardem.
Yes.
I will make it sound like that came quicker. But I'll leave that comment in so you know it didn't. Yeah, I liked him as Stilgar. And yeah, the stuff with Chani is a little different, right? Because they don't have a child.
Right.
So you don't have that moment where Paul, with his clairvoyance, knows that their son is dead because Reban has killed him in the southern areas.
Right. Well, they never made it to the southern areas. They were completely oblivious of it.
Well, they went down there the one time just to rally all the Na'vi.
Fundamentalists.
Fremen.
Yeah, the fundamentalists.
The Fedaken.
Yeah.
But that was one of Robin's failings, is he had no idea that there were that many...
Right. Well, he was buying into the conventional wisdom, right? He didn't do his own research.
This is what they told me. How can you blame me? He should have known better.
Mm-hmm. I keep thinking, like, if they have all this space technology, where are their satellites? And how would they not have figured that out? I get there's a storm barrier getting there, but the storms aren't constant.
Yeah, and they're not above the planet.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
all the sieges are Faraday cages, so they can't actually see anything going on there.
Right.
Yeah. Well, the other problem is, but like I was talking about at dinner,
the ecosystem doesn't make any sense.
The ecosystem does. There's nothing green, and so how do you make oxygen?
That's true.
And if you have a closed system like a planet, where does the water they're storing come from? It can only come from living things that then can't use it to.
They've been disappearing a lot of people for a lot of
times. Yeah, a lot of Harkonnens.
Yeah.
Of course, well, you know, at least for the...
Well, they did say they had... I mean, like the original idea, right, was to unlock water from under the planet, like underground, right? But...
The Fountains of the Deep.
Yeah. They did mention that in the first movie. But that's a good point with the lack of greenery for oxygen.
Yeah, that's kind of important.
It's like, yeah.
But yeah, so remember that in the 60s when this was written, and maybe... You have to carry that forward because, you know, we know so much more technologically now, 60 years later. They didn't put cameras on those satellites. they bounced, and I think they had some ambient sensors.
Good point.
That was kind of it.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe there was a camera on one of those satellites.
We don't really ask the ecological questions about Tatooine.
No.
But it's space fantasy,
it's kind
right?
of a common theme in space fantasy is these one ecological... planets. Hoth is an ice planet. Uh-huh. Like how is that?
Yeah, how do they make oxygen?
Right? Ice planet, the desert planet Tatooine. Yeah. Like Klingon, Konos, right? Is a jungle planet. That's it. Mm-hmm. Like you have an entire planet, jungles?
Yeah.
You gotta have poles, right? Yeah. So how is Earth the only biologically diverse planet in the universe?
Yeah. Yeah.
Just lucky, I guess.
I guess. The Goldilocks zone.
Yeah.
It's just cracks about thinking about this. It's a super sci-fi trip, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I'm sure there's some unobtainium that Brian Herbert could have, not Brian Herbert.
Frank
Herbert. Yeah. Could have come up with, or more likely Brian, or Kevin J. Anderson would have come up with to say that, well, spice decays into oxygen and
other things. Sure. Yeah. It's spicy.
Well, kind of like, you know, vibranium. You can make anything out of it, right? Tiberium from Command and Conquer. You can make anything out of it. You know, the Chani stuff was maybe a little soapy, you know, love triangle almost sort of thing. Like, but like you said, I think you made a good point, Colin, is that it's not just that she's jealous of Princess Aerilon, right? She fell in love with Paul, not the Mahdi,
right?
Not the role.
Right? Usul.
Not the kangaroo mouse.
And she seemed even a little, like when they named him, right? She seemed a little, I liked him. I liked him before he was cool. You know?
Right.
I liked how they had the mouse show up several times in here.
Mm-hmm.
He makes his own water.
Right. So makes it. Yeah. I like how they did that to make his name cool. I was like, that's a good point. Yeah.
Well, and we got both Usul and Muad'Dib, right?
We did. So. Right? And we got a little bit of, you know, tell me of the waters of your home planet, Usul. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting to think about. Like, if you came from a place with no, you know, water like that, would you believe in a place like Oregon, where it literally snowed today?
Yeah. A couple of times.
Yeah.
And then got really sunny, and then got snowy again.
Yeah.
crazy bipolar weather.
Yeah, and the water falls from the sky. And it does with regular, and like he said, yeah, sometimes for weeks. I'm like, yeah, that you can tell that Frank Herbert was from the Northwest.
Right.
Yeah. Well, we shouldn't forget, you know, this whole thing was inspired by his trip to Astoria.
To the dunes.
Right.
All these great things come from Oregon.
Yes, absolutely.
Yep.
Book ideas, movies, podcasts. Mm-hmm.
I was trying to figure out if I missed the part where Gurney thinks that Jessica, Lady Jessica, was the one who betrayed Leto. So it's a big part when they reunite. Mm-hmm. He goes and attacks Lady Jessica because he thinks it must have been her that betrayed him.
Right.
Because she's a Bene Gesserit witch.
Right.
But I feel like he doesn't see her for long enough that Paul would have explained exactly what happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was already heading south, wasn't she?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that the palanquin for her looked like a snake's head. When they didn't have the windows
right covered, when the windows like covered yeah it's like a snake skull. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's very cool.
Did you guys pick up the nod from the, to the book where Gurney is playing the sitar?
Yeah, that was cool. Yep.
I was thinking, oh, Colin will like that.
I did like that.
We didn't get any music from him in the previous one.
Right.
He didn't seem particularly skilled to me though.
No.
Yeah.
I think he was playing the blues on his whatever it's called.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Being a
yeah, it was like playing harmonica in the cell or something.
Yeah,
right. Exactly. Nobody
knows. Yeah.
The spices I've seen. I like that they kept the whole, you know, surrendering to the storm part of getting away. I thought that was pretty cool.
Oh, in the first movie?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
See, I watched the movie immediately before we left to go see the second movie, so I might have some blurring between the two.
No, I'm glad I watched the first movie because I think I have a better appreciation for it on a rewatch.
It made it easier to see if, like, I was trying to figure out if there had been any time jump, right? Were we going to come into this movie and he already had the blue eyes?
Right.
No. I liked the way the blue eyes were executed here, where it's subtle. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It wasn't, they didn't try to map, you know, rotoscope.
Right.
Oh, eyes on her or anything. And it was, the blue was there, but it wasn't just, you know, it wasn't neon.
Right.
And I kind of like that.
Like the black teeth for the Harkonnens.
Yeah. Yes. But it wasn't all the Harkonnens, though, right? Because Raban didn't have that, and neither did the Baron. But I guess that was just the style back home.
Maybe it was mouth guards.
Could be.
More of a style thing than a biological thing. Maybe. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One thing that I appreciated here was it showed more of a body count than I feel like we'd seen in other movies in terms of the losses that the Fremen were taking. When they do that attack on the harvester, and they kind of have to work together to take down the ornithopter that's going around and just taking people out with a flat gun.
Oh yeah,
that was cool. And then in other places, you're just like, oh well, they're not getting through here unscathed. This is not a zero losses kind of thing. In a war, people get killed,
right?
And it's good to be reminded of that.
Well, yeah, all through the whole second half of the second movie, Paul's like, I can't go to the southern part of Arrakis.
Yeah.
Otherwise, this is the path that happens, right? Mm-hmm. I can't go meet the fundamentalists. And at one point, he was going to send everybody but him down there, and then finally realized he had to go.
Yeah.
Must fulfill. No escaping destiny.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's almost like it's sort of the rejection of the call kind of from the hero's journey. But but it's also like you can totally see why he would make that decision. It's like, no, it's not worth it because he didn't want to rule. You know, and he didn't want to rule at the expense of billions of people dying in a holy war.
And losing Chani.
Yeah. So we'll see, you know, what happens from here, because it didn't have like a wrapped up in a bow ending. It's like the war is starting, and that's where we're at in Dune Messiah.
Yeah. And she was pissed.
Yeah. It's been going on.
Yeah. Chani's pissed. Aaliyah hasn't been born yet. There's something that got slipped in. And I mean that literally as well as figuratively, that I don't remember being in the book. And that was the Bene Gesserit sent one of their witches to go sleep with Fade.
Right. Making sure that the bloodline survives.
Right.
Yeah. And she pats her belly. Yeah. So she's pregnant.
That was
wasn't it? Yeah. It was the Empress, wasn't it? The Emperor's daughter?
No.
Mm-mm.
Oh,
no.
Shit. I thought it was.
No, that's Florence Pugh?
Yeah, Florence Pugh is Irulan. No, it was somebody else.
Oh, crap. Oh, I totally got that confused because I thought, I was thinking they messed that up in the book. Oh, good. I'm glad you brought that up because I thought they messed that up. But maybe they didn't. Okay, fine. On screen, to me, they look the same. My bad.
Yeah.
Because they kept switching costumes. I don't know.
Now, maybe that's something that gets brought up in the second book because I've never read Beyond. I tried to read the second book because I read the first book when I was in junior high and I really liked it. Right. And I tried to read the second book and it was so chock full of politics and sociology, I didn't get past more than 10 pages.
Mm. Yeah. So, I got further than that, but I gave up pretty quickly. Yeah. And I read the Wikipedia summary, and I watched the Children of Dune miniseries on Sci-Fi was smashed together Dune Messiah and the Children of Dune.
Yeah, I wonder if that's what he's going to do for the third movie.
There's some weird stuff in there, though, where somebody becomes a sandworm.
Yeah.
What? So, yeah.
Sorry, no spoilers.
How do you become a sandworm?
Yeah. Well, once you're the Kwisatz Haderach, you get all these superpowers.
All crazy powers.
Yes.
Fair enough.
I mean, if he does that movie, you know, I feel like he's shown that he can adapt this material well. So, I'll definitely, we'll circle back to it if it happens.
Right.
Well, and if, you know, Denny, I don't know if you'll ever hear this. If you want to take a break and do Rama first, we'll watch the third movie anyway.
Yeah, definitely be up for that.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
So yeah, we might be reading more Frank Herbert in the future.
Mm-hmm. Well, so was Irulan a Bene Gesserit in the book? I don't remember it being explicit that she was.
I don't think she was.
I thought she was court trained, and I thought it's possible that there's Bene Gesserit who are doing that, but this made it explicit that she is essentially in their order. But
yeah.
So, you know, who knows what they'll do in terms of the bloodlines and that kind of stuff, right? Because we don't have, Chani could be pregnant already.
Okay, so speaking of the bloodlines thing, when it came out that he was also like Harkonnen due to his mom, right? And it turns out the Baron was actually like, what did you say, grandfather, right?
Yeah.
Right.
I felt that came out like out of nowhere in the movie.
Oh, it does in the book too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
True.
And then Paul uses that to distract Fade during the fight, right? When he calls him cousin,
right?
In the book, and that gives him an advantage, and he ends up winning. Where this one,
he starts right out with it. It was like, oh man, you lost an opportunity there. Yeah.
There's a couple of reasons he ended up winning in the book. The first one is that Fade was using a poisoned dagger, right? And so Paul just transmuted the poison to be something, you know, innocuous.
Oh, I forgot that. Yeah.
Yeah. That was completely dropped.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I think because they expected him to die and he didn't. Then he had that surprise thing about, oh, you're not dying due to my poison. And then he gets killed.
Mm. Right.
Yeah.
That would have been cool, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was looking forward to that.
Although still the delayed death thing, I don't know, maybe still works.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little hard to show in a movie.
Yeah.
Right? They didn't even really, I mean, they survived the water of life, right? But they didn't show any molecules or anything.
No. And maybe that's one of the things that happened in the 84 movie that they didn't want to repeat. Because, you know, Aaliyah was like seriously creepy in the 84 movie. So,
yeah.
Well, they did do the whole mythical thing with her mom, as well as his mom. I mean, when she took the water of life first, right? And I totally thought it was going to like kill the baby. And then it didn't. Mm. But they had like the blue going all around the fetus and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Yeah.
Well, I've come to the end of my notes that I scrolled down after the movie.
Fair.
I thought it was very cool makes a great adaptation of Dune in two movies.
Right.
And, you know, much as I hated the trend of let's do a book series and the last movie that we do based on the books, we're going to break into two. like do that all along.
Right.
If you think it takes two movies to adapt a book, don't just do it in the final movie to milk it.
Right.
Where here I felt like, yeah, absolutely.
Right.
600 page, very dense book, not easy to adapt, and doing it into two movies with the kind of love to the, you know, and attention to detail, the production design is just off the charts.
Oh, yeah.
Fantastic.
I'm a fan of doing that. So if you're out there and you want to adapt movies, sure, you could go to television, or you could decide, would this make more than one movie?
Yeah.
Just don't decide to make three movies out of a short book.
Right.
Again. I'm never going to let that go. Well, are we wrapped? Any other final closing thoughts?
No.
Okay. So we are having to plan around some of James's travel, and then we all have some travel later in the year as well. speaking of which, your humble podcasters from Take Me to Your Reader will be at Worldcon in Glasgow, or at least in Glasgow. Not necessarily at Worldcon. So if you're out there and you want to meet up with us, let us know and we can start planning that. We're not renting any cars, so we'll be on foot. You can chase us down. Yeah. All right. Working around the scheduling and that kind of stuff, we're going to pre-record some stuff. So we'll do an episode on Spaceman that dropped on Netflix, I think, today.
Spaceman Bohemia.
Oh, yeah. Spaceman. Yeah,
Spaceman the movie based on Spaceman of Bohemia by Czech author Jaroslav something.
Yes.
We
will get that right guy when we do the episode. And so we'll have that one for April. That way we've got March and April covered while James is traveling. And then we'll figure out something to sweetener. Do down the line. Well, I think I suggested something because I'm reading A Wrinkle in Time for Hugo's.
Right.
Oh, so we could do that for May, perhaps.
Yeah, that could work.
Is that science fiction or is it fantasy?
It's fantasy. I mean, there's travel to other planets.
Ooh, we can have that debate.
Holes, true.
I think it's more like space fantasy because there's travel to other planets,
right.
but it's more or less magic.
Right.
Anyway. I'm sold.
Yeah. All right. So that may be the plan, but subject to change.
As usual, subject to change. Yep.
Most of the time, you find out what we're doing when you look at the title of the episode. So, and it's worked reasonably well for the couple hundred listeners.
Right.
So, well, thank you everyone for listening, and we've already talked about all the other stuff. So,
yep.
Going to leave you with a typical blessing. May the road rise up to meet you, and may the book always fall open to where you left off. Goodbye, everyone.
Ciao.